Welcome to Bits About Books, the home for conversations with authors of breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. I am your host, Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where our mission is to make buying easy. Welcome to Bits About Books. Our guest today is Stan Peek, and we speak with him about his book, Never Sell Again, and Make More Sales Than Ever Before.
I've worked with a lot, thousands of service-based professionals who do great work and who need to be out there more. But the problem is, as soon as they're face-to-face with somebody, it goes away from the work. It goes away from how they can help people, and they feel like they're in this high-pressure sales environment where they feel inauthentic. They feel like the goal is to take money out of the person's wallet, where it's not the case.
Stan Peek is an expert at unleashing potential one leader and one business at a time, named as one of the top 10 executive coaches to follow in 2023 by US Insider and a top voice in both business coaching and leadership by LinkedIn, Stan is on a mission to help 1 million leaders discover their potential. Co-founder at FSQ Consulting Inc., he has grown a team of over 40 executive coaches to help impact more leaders all over the world. Stan is also certified as an executive coach and as a corporate facilitator and cultural transformation tools practitioner. He holds a graduate certificate in value-based leadership from Royal Roads University, an executive education in sales leadership from Queen's University, and a diploma with distinction in cognitive behavioral therapy from the Center of Excellence. Most recently, Stan completed an online certificate in entrepreneurship and innovation from Harvard Business School. He was recently named the Global Chapter Organizer for the Entrepreneurship and Innovation Networking Group for Harvard Business School Online. Author of 9 business books, including 7 bestsellers, Stan has spoken at conferences and coached entrepreneurs, executives, and athletes from Victoria, British Columbia to Miami, Florida, and as far away as Switzerland and Australia. Stan's TEDx talk, Lasting Happiness is an Inside Job, has over 114,000 views on YouTube. Stan has also been published in several magazines, newspapers, and blogs like Entrepreneur Magazine and BizStore Media. While not coaching or speaking, Stan enjoys traveling and staying active with family and friends. He resides in Calgary, Alberta, Canada with his wife Maria, son Chase, and dog Zeke. Now, onto this contrarian episode with Stan Peek. Stan, welcome to Bits About Books. I'm excited to talk to you, and what a wonderful day to catch up.
Shubhanjan, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to, dive into it.
So tell me, when did your writing career start? How long back was it? How many books back? What is it? Because you have written a lot of books.
9. And so, yes, the first book we wrote would have been about 2007. And we didn't know there was a word for it at the time, but it was a blog to book. There was 5 of us in Canada and the United States who collectively contributed to a leadership blog. And we called it Swim Upstream, unsubscribing to conventional wisdom. And lo and behold, by writing every week about our experiences in our different businesses and in different philanthropic endeavors, we just came across a lot of fodder for a really good blog. And next thing we knew, we had written 300 blog posts. And as the 5 of us, we decided, now we're going to pick our top 100 and we're going to publish these as kind of principles or great stories or anecdotes about leadership. So that was the first book. And I was not the quarterback of the project. So it kind of, just by being involved in that group, next thing you know, we had a book, and all the other ones, definitely a story behind each of them, but that's what started it all.
Wonderful, wonderful. And that has been a long journey, and 9 books is no mean feat, so congratulations. The one we are talking about is the one before your latest book.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, here today we're talking about Never Sell Again, which seems completely counterintuitive to why someone would buy a sales book.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say that a lot of selling about selling is actually not productive. Forget about counterintuitive. And I think if we are not paying attention to counterintuitive ideas, then we will remain at a stage where 70% of our SDRs and our sales folks will not meet their target by a large margin. So I think it is time for counterintuitive, and it's a timely discussion that we are having. So tell me about, so you have already written like 7 books by now, and you are thinking of this subject, I'm guessing, and it's still not formed in your head. It's sort of like you're getting indications, you're getting ideas, you are a coach, so you're talking to people, you're hearing things, and these are triggering thoughts. How did this actually come about?
Well, you're exactly right. Basically, as a coach, I coach entrepreneurs to help them grow their business, and I coach leaders on their leadership acumen and basically what we say, why they're worth following. And that's why the typical subject tracks of those books are entrepreneurship and business growth and leadership. So with this book, what came up over and over again was people's limiting beliefs and basically what gets in the way when it comes to sales. Effectively, I've worked with a lot of people over my career. In my previous career was in health, fitness, and medical. So I was working with fitness trainers, physiotherapists, doctors, nurses, you name it, naturopathic doctors. And then as an executive coach, I've worked with business coaches, leadership coaches. I certainly know a lot of life coaches. In short, I've worked with a lot, thousands of service-based professionals who do great work and who need to be out there more. But the problem is, as soon as they're face-to-face with somebody, it goes away from the work. It goes away from how they can help people, and they feel like they're in this high-pressure sales environment where they feel inauthentic. They feel like the goal is to take money out of the person's wallet, where it's not the case. And so it wasn't so much something that I saw or that I was taught or researched. It was really, there's a story that I'll share in a moment, but this book was about 23 years in the making. And I just saw these patterns of behavior repeat themselves over and over again until I realized I've seen there's a better way. And as a coach, as a service-based professional, I wanted to help other people who had experienced what I'd experienced and what I've seen thousands of other people stumble on before.
Yeah, makes sense. So I can totally understand this whole idea that there is something germinating. You're seeing a pattern. You're seeing these dots, and you know that these dots can be connected, but there comes a time when you say, now is the time to connect the dots and get it out there. So was there a trigger which sort of set you on the course to write the book?
Yeah, I think the trigger was just having the same conversation over and over again. In my coaching practice, we use certain tools. Here's a way to understand your purpose. Here's a way to understand what your core values might be. Here's a SWOT analysis before you get into your strategic plan. Those are tools when you've gone through similar challenges and you want similar outcomes. When you see something over and over again, you realize there's a process for this or there's a pattern to this. So it was having that conversation again and again and again. And I just said, that's it. I'm having this conversation so many times. I just got to get the book out there. So I'll share the impetus, the story, the original. As I mentioned, my first career was in health and wellness and fitness. So I was the fitness director for one of the largest fitness franchises on the planet for Canada, their Canadian division. And it was up to me to hire the fitness trainers and the fitness staff. And the nutrition staff also fell under my watch. So I hired a brilliant dietitian. Like, this person had a resume like, wow, amazing. They were so well qualified. And I felt really proud of myself that I found such a wonderful person. They had great values and they really knew their stuff. And in the course of the next month, they sold $0 in nutrition or dietitian services. And what happened was they had this limiting belief that if I'm too good at sales, people are going to think I'm not very good at the delivery. Mm-hmm. And I'm here because I'm an expert dietitian, not because I'm a great salesperson. They thought you had to be one or the other. So zero sales, unfortunately, we had to let this person go. Then I find someone else. And this person was charismatic. They had great energy. And the next thing I know, they sold something like $15,000 in nutrition services in 2 weeks. Now I really felt like I'd nailed it. However, this was the 1990s, and we were using some pretty antiquated systems at the time. So we didn't have a great point of sale system where all of our cash went. This person used their own point of sale system, and we were going to reconcile the cash flow after. You can probably understand where this story is going. They skip town with all the money, and we're left holding the bag, the empty bag. We've got to provide $15,000 of nutrition services and pay someone else to do it. So I just lost the company this much money.
Yeah.
And I was so frustrated that I thought, there has to be a third way. I don't want to hire a professional who is a career academic who cannot get into a conversation about money with a client who's considering their services. I also don't want a snake oil salesperson who's a criminal. So what I didn't have the coaching vernacular at the time to understand that was what was happening for those really good professionals was their limiting beliefs were getting in the way. What I discovered by going through a lot of education, I did an executive education in sales leadership. I've owned or co-owned 8 businesses, so you have a lot of sales experience yourself. What I realized was happening was twofold. Number one, there was limiting beliefs. And number two, this person and thousands more had their focus on the wrong area. So the fundamental premise behind this book really is to shift your focus and pay attention to what matters. Sales is just one small part of the value delivery chain. I'll use coaching for an example. It's a pretty straightforward business. There's not that many moving parts. If you're looking for a coach, first of all, you want to find out how do you find me. Then we meet together. Hopefully, we have a good first experience. The goal of a discovery session is I'm going to solve at least a couple of your problems and help you understand this is what I would get out of coaching. Then you make a decision to purchase or not purchase, purchase with that coach or find a different coach. Then you get on with the actual coaching. But the pre-sale activities are not just to make a sale. It's not about convincing you to buy. The never sell again philosophy is don't sell, serve. If we treat the pre-sales process as part of customer service and adding value, then we approach it completely differently. It's about giving you more value than the next person. The sale is just one transactional element in a multitude of steps. And then when that's over, we continue on with the service delivery. So that's the fundamental philosophy. There's a couple more important points to it that we'll get to it, but that's where it all started. Is two people, one I had to fire, one that quit and skipped town. And I was just so frustrated that I wasn't going to repeat those mistakes. That's how this philosophy was born more than 2 decades ago.
Wonderful story. I'm sure people who are listening to this would sort of remember this, because that's how memories are made and that's how people retain information, right?
Exactly.
So Stan, we'll talk about actual writing of the book. How long did it take you? How did you structure it? What went on behind the scenes here?
So because this idea was really already in my head, marinating for quite some time, the process of writing the book was relatively quick. My first solo project, the second book I wrote, that took over a year. And I didn't have a process. So you keep adding content, and then you wonder where it's going. And then you're writing content while you're editing, while you're rethinking your original premise. Really inefficient way to do anything. So this book, two things happen. Number one, all of the stories, all of the philosophies, they're already there. And it was already something that had come out so many times previously in coaching engagements. So all I really need to do was, what is the point of the book? I wanted to start with the end in mind. Who am I writing this book for? What do I want them to do as a result of reading this book? And when I knew that outcome, then it was a question of how do I get them to that outcome? What stories am I telling? How am I structuring the information? And this is the process I've used for the last several books, is I use this process to reverse engineer it. But because I have now have a system, this book came together pretty quickly. The only reason it took a couple of months is because I had started the leadership book before I started this book. And then I started having those conversations I told you about over and over again. So I slowed down the leadership book to add this book project. And that took a couple of months. But I probably could have written this book inside of a couple of weeks if I didn't have a whole bunch of things happening at once.
When you had this, did you sort of write down the flow of the book and then wrote the content, or was it vice versa, or was it something which was a mix of both?
It really starts with, like I say, the outcome in mind, and then it's how do I get that outcome? So is there any research required? Is there any data that I need to not only come up with, but validate? Is it anecdotes? Because there really is an emotional journey that the reader is going on. And so it's, what is the problem? How do you build the problem so that people relate to that problem? And then how do you add hope and solutions to the point where somebody goes, I've identified this is something I struggle with. I feel the problem. Now I feel the hope. I know what to do, and I'm going to do it. So that's the journey that I want the reader to go on with my nonfiction books. Again, I don't have anything to say about a process for writing a fiction book. That's the journey that I want the reader to go on, because the whole point of the book is to be able to help more people.
Sure. So let's dive in. So let's talk about what do you really mean when, and imagine that you are talking to a salesperson and you are telling him, never sell again. What is it that you are telling him?
So what I'm telling that salesperson is to not be in the act of selling. Selling is a transaction, it's an outcome. Salespeople understand KPIs, key performance indicators, and people that have been doing sales for a while understand the difference between lagging KPIs, in other words, outcomes, and leading KPIs, in other words, input metrics. So a lagging KPI is revenue. A leading KPI might be sales meetings or how many opportunities are in your pipeline. So yes, those are transactional things. But when we sell, even the word, when we say sell or sales, people have what's called a bioreaction. They usually react negatively. Dan Pink, in his book, To Sell is Human, there's a word cluster. And this word cluster is based on how often words show up. And it was all on research on what people's reaction was to the word sales or salesperson. And it was words like ugh, ick, sleazy. Just, that's not what we want. The only positive was necessary, not even helpful. So when we say never sell again, it's don't sell the way people expect a salesperson to show up. And I'm going to add a coaching element here, because your focus dictates your state. In other words, whatever you pay attention to is going to inform how we show up. So, Shubham Jain, if you and I have a meeting and you're a potential prospect, I can focus on selling to you or I can focus on helping you. And really quick, if I'm focused on sales, if my business isn't doing well and I really need this commission, then I'm going to come in there feeling pressure, anxiety, stress. And you've heard the expression, 55% of communication is what we say, as body language, 38% is paralanguage, the way we say it, and only 7% are the actual words we use. So 93% of what I communicate is not what I say, but how I say it. There's a lot of these soft, you know, human social cues that come through.
Right.
Conversely, you've heard the expression, we only use 10% of our brains. It's not true. That's a lot of wasted real estate. We've got over, you know, we have between 86 billion and 100 billion neurons. So what happens is we only make 10% of our decisions consciously. When you drive to work every day, you don't think about your commute because you've done it so many times. You don't think about breathing. Your body does it for you. Your subconscious brain does it for you. So the point is we make 90% of our decisions subconsciously. We're not thinking about it. Add those two together. 93% of what I tell you isn't the words I use. 90% of what you're deciding on is what you perceive, not what you think about. And survival is the strongest instinct in the body. 3 to 5 times a second, we're scanning our environments for danger. So if you're a prospect, you're meeting with a salesperson, your subconscious mind is doing most of the work. If I'm anxious, if I'm nervous, if I'm stressed, that does not help you get to the place you need to be to make a purchase decision. My energy influences your energy. So if I'm stressed, you become apprehensive. If I'm anxious, you become anxious. Well, that's opposite to the energy that I want you in if you're going to make a purchase. You're going to make a purchase, I want you feeling what? Peace of mind. You found a solution to a problem. I want you feeling trust. I want you feeling, hey, I could spend time with this guy as my coach. So if I'm in a sales energy, I actually create fewer sales. Really quickly, if I'm focused on helping you, then I bypass, I need this commission, I need the money. What happens is I go right into discovery-based sales. I start asking you intuitive questions. I listen. And then based on what I hear, I've got a better way of positioning what I do and how it can help you. And it comes across as a great sales pitch. It's not a pitch at all. It's a dynamic conversation because I care about you and I listened to you and I heard you. I can then tell you exactly how I can help you. And my energy is patient, calm, I'm present. And that puts you in exactly the same sort of state, which is far more likely to actually lead to a purchase decision. By the way, what's critical to this whole process is we don't manipulate people. You don't fake it to make it because you can't fake your energy. You can't fake your emotions. So you actually have to care about your prospect. You have to care about your marketplace. And if you do, the good guys win. You show up to serve and you will make more sales. That's the premise.
It's time for a short break. Stay with us. After the break.
First thing is there's a philosophical disconnect between how we buy and how we sell. Salespeople have to remember we're consumers too. How many times do we wake up in the morning saying, I hope I get a cold email. I hope I get a direct mail piece or two. I hope when I walk into that store, a salesperson rushes me in the face. No. We want to buy the opposite way.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end. Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for Bits About Books and founder of PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. Let's dive right back into the episode where we left it.
I have a lot of conversations, I do, as you would presume, with sales folks and leaders and so on. one of the biggest points that I see, which is plaguing, literally plaguing sales, is this obsession with selling now.
Yes.
This whole glorification of always be closing.
Right.
We sort of, you know, idealize that. Right. And we completely ignore how actually things are bought. One of the things I've been talking to a lot of my friends who talk about sales is that, have you noticed the complete 100% absence of any buyer joining any conversation about sales?
Yes.
We keep talking about what works, right? If I'm a cold calling guru, I'll say cold calling works. If I'm a cold mailing guru, I'll say cold mailing works. I'll say this works, that works. All the talk is done by salespeople with salespeople.
That's right.
It's like hundreds of patients trying to talk to each other about what they know about a disease. There is no doctor present.
Exactly. Exactly.
And that's sort of, it's sort of a fueling this whole here and now instant gratification, instant. And the leadership is to blame. And I have done a series of interviews a couple of years back. At some point, I'll point you to those about the 5% problem, right? So we are all stuck in the 5%. We are all sort of focused on the red ocean, and we do not want to engage with people who may buy 6 months, 8 months, because he's going to become that 3% 8 months down the line, but I don't want to engage with him today.
Exactly.
This is exactly what you are talking about, and I think it is far more humanly enriching if you are doing this work. And all you have to do it is do it for 6 months, and then your pipeline is automatic.
Absolutely.
You're anyway not closing the deals. You're anyway not selling.
Well, the other thing is, two more things come to mind as you're saying that. Couldn't agree more. First thing is, there's a philosophical disconnect between how we buy and how we sell. Salespeople have to remember, we're consumers too. How many times do we wake up in the morning saying, I hope I get a cold email. I hope I get a direct mail piece or two. I hope when I walk into that store, a salesperson rushes me in the face. No, we want to buy the opposite way. We did this for a previous sales book. We did surveys with all kinds of buyers, asking them, we asked thousands of people, how do you want a salesperson to approach you? How do you want to buy from a salesperson? And it was, don't be pushy, don't be hovering, but be available, be helpful. Take time, discover my needs before you pitch anything. When you do pitch, know your value proposition. Know why you are better, different, or more unique than the next person. And so that's how we want to buy. When we are in an active purchasing mode, then we actually want a helpful salesperson. We don't think salespeople bug us unless they bug us. So if that's how we want to buy, why don't we just sell that way? And it goes to what you said as well. You're right. 5%, those are the statistics. 5% are ready to buy right now. 95% are at varying stages of the buyer's journey, from maybe one day to doing their due diligence. By the way, old statistics, by the time the salesperson even gets involved, most buyers are more than 57% through their buyer's process. So trying to convince them, no, be a resource. Our job is to catch up to our clients, or to our buyers. But where I was going with this is 78% of all purchases begin with a referral. 74% of all customers would be willing to give a referral. Only 24 or 25% of salespeople actually ask. Now, if we think about that hard close approach, I'm going to push someone into a sale, how likely is that customer going to give a referral? But if you help, if you're helpful every step of the way, you're there, you care, those people are highly likely to give a referral. So to your point, not only 6 months later is your pipeline full, it's actually full of inbound leads from referrals of people you've helped along the way. It's taking the slow approach, seemingly slow approach, is actually the faster way. Because I don't know anyone that can hard close faster than the people they kind of burn bridges with.
Absolutely. And I think it's sort of, we literally spoke about five different chapters of your book right now.
Right, exactly.
Right? So let's touch upon a few of these. Let's talk about it's not about you and speak their language. That's exactly what we just now spoke about, right?
Yes.
You have to realize that this discussion, this sales spiel, whatever process, is not about you at all.
Exactly.
It appears so because I'll get a commission end of it. It appears like that, but it's not about that. I can't go and tell you, Stan, you know what? I'm not going to get my commission this month unless you buy. That's not going to make you buy.
No, that doesn't move the needle.
And another, I think, very important point you raised in a sales conversation, and obviously there are exceptions. There are great sales guys who are doing completely the way you are saying, or the way buyers are buying. So it's not that it's 100% reflection of no, but it's a majority, right? That's why majority is missing the target and all that. The patience to listen. So and that's a general, I would say, skill that we are losing as human beings, right? So we are always waiting for you to, suppose I'm speaking, my objective is, when do you stop? So the moment you take a pause, maybe to take a breath, I'm in, because I have to tell what I have to tell you. How many times have you heard people, friends, family, saying, hey, before I forget, I need to tell you something, right? Now, if I'm that person, I need to realize my forgetting is my problem, not yours.
Exactly.
I cannot interrupt what you're telling or what you're thinking and say, hey, stop what you're doing because I need to tell you something because I may forget. I think it sort of percolates in sales. And finally, we are all part of the society, the same society, we become the same place. We are all...
Not even sort of. I wouldn't say sort of. I would say it's there. When we do any sales training, we talk about the two most important skills for sales are to ask great questions and to listen with your whole body.
Yeah.
So it's not sort of, it's absolutely essential. And we also, with listening, we break it down to three levels of listening. Level one listening is exactly what you're talking about. It's you said something and it struck a chord with me and I can't wait for you to finish talking so I can tell you what I want to say. Well, now that listening is about me. And by the way, sometimes we don't even let the other person finish talking. We interrupt them, right? So level one listening is poor quality listening, and it's all about the listener, where we know that's not true listening. Level two, now I'm actually keyed in on you. I'm listening to you, and I might even use techniques like, Shpanjan, what I've heard there was, and I might reframe to make sure I've captured your meaning. Now that is high quality listening. So your listeners might be saying, well, is there a level above that? Yes. Level one, the focus is me. Level two, the focus is you. Level three, the focus is we. So put another way, if I'm barely listening to you in level one, but I just want to one-up you or tell you my story, then I'm listening with my mouth. I'm listening so I can speak. Level two, I'm listening to hear. I'm listening with my ears, and the focus is on you. Level three, I'm listening with my whole body. I'm listening with my soul, if you will, and the whole goal is listening to co-create value. Maybe I don't sell. Maybe I say, you know what, after listening to you, I don't know that I'd be the person to help you, but I think this person would be. Or maybe even, you know what, I think you've got some real merit to your business idea. If you're willing, I'd love to make an introduction to so-and-so who might be able to help you with financing, or they have your ideal customer as their customers, and the two of you can work together. That's level three listening, is that when you really truly care and you want to serve and support. If we do that from a sales perspective, one thing that's really important I should clarify when we go through the discovery-based sales process, asking questions and listening, usually it's ask, clarify, and then position your value proposition against your prospect's pain points, needs, goals, problems. The massive caveat is unless you're not the right person for them, at which point your moral obligation is to say, I'm not the right person for you. I'm not the right coach for you. This is not the right car for you. This is not the right house for you. This is not the right tech stack for you. Conversely, if you listen to somebody and you've got any compunction around sales whatsoever, we tell people to remember, somebody who doesn't care about your prospect as much as you do is more than happy to take their money. So typically, if you care about your customer and you've got a great product or service, what's in your customer's best interest is that they do business with you. And your moral obligation in this case is to help your customer to the best of your abilities. And if that means that they should do business with you, it's time to get out of your own way and out of your customer's way, listen to them and be there to serve them.
This is such a good point. I have one question. And before we go into requesting you to really talk about what is the Never Sell Again system, so just so that we encapsulate this discussion, I have one question. So if I'm a sales guy, I'm asking you this question. Hey, Stan, I have to sell because I need the money or I lose my job. You are asking me to be caring when I need the sale and I need to sell. And you are saying that be patient for 6 months. I have to put food on the table. How does this work for me?
Well, the great thing is it doesn't always take 6 months. A lot of people who are ready to remember, your buyer is at least 50%, 57% of the way through their purchase decision before you even meet them. We've had sales cycles that take years, not just 6 months. We've also had some that take days. So the one thing we never know is how ready your prospect is to buy. The other thing we never know is what their values are. I made this mistake. Our values, including our budget and our views of money, should never enter the conversation, even subconsciously. I remember when I first started my coaching business, there was a young guy, younger than me anyway, and he wanted to move up the career ladder. That was why he wanted a coach. So we meet, we have a good meeting, and I start running through what the different options for this person are. What are the different packages? And in coaching, a lot of times, to pay for 6 months of coaching up front, usually an individual doesn't do that. Their company might. So I was kind of just going through the options really quick, thinking that this person might do month to month. In fact, because they were younger, the limiting belief in my head was this person was going to ask me for a discount. But no, they were the first client I had that pulled out their credit card and asked if they could pay for 6 months upfront. That taught me in a moment, never, never assume what your client's going to do and don't lead them a certain way based on what you think value looks like or what they want.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think this is it's such a valuable point because we are so driven by our own biases.
Yes.
And we are so convinced that those are correct.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, ask somebody, do you know what the distance to the moon is? And somebody says so many kilometers. There's no way. It can't be that. It is this. Right. Both the people are wrong, but both are convinced that they're right. And that happens all the time.
Well, that's like you and I standing 30 feet apart, and there is a 6 between us that's horizontal, that's placed vertically, right? I'm looking at a 6, and I'm convinced I'm right. You're looking at a 9, and you're convinced you're right. We're going to argue, you know, till the cows come home.
Exactly. Yeah. How funny is that? Anyway, yeah, I think being open to the fact that our conditioning, I mean, you grew up in North America, I grew up in India, we have complete different cultural biases, we have completely sure. different orientation, thought process, and trying to think that I can understand you over a conversation or vice versa can be very damaging, actually.
And you're absolutely right. This is why listening is so important. And I forget the philosopher who said, in order to learn anything, I need to unlearn everything. When we truly want to listen, we do need to let go of what we think we know. especially when it comes to value and value proposition. This goes back to the it's not about you, because what I see, and we used to do pitch coaching. We would have entrepreneurs, salespeople say, I'm good at this. This is what I do. Who wants it? That's backwards. Right. So what we recommend is start with the end in mind. Who's your audience? What do they need? What do they want? What do they struggle with? And as a result, why should they care about what you're selling? So I was the keynote speaker for a group of event professionals a few years ago, and I was practicing my speech one last time and on my way to give my speech. And at this cooperative workspace that I worked out of the time, there was this long hallway full of paintings. So again, I've got value proposition on the brain, right? I think the title of my talk was Your Value Proposition is Not About You. So there's no accidents. Walking down this hallway to go give my talk, and I see this 4-foot by 4-foot canvas, and it's all covered in black paint. And not a design, I'm talking just covered. It's just black. And at the time, my son was probably like, 8 years old. He could have done that. And the artist was charging $2,500 for this big black canvas. In their mind, maybe that represented angst or pain or struggle or success. How would I know? I just looked at this thing as it was no longer worth the canvas it was printed on because it was covered in black paint. I wasn't the target market. I wasn't dropping $2,500 on this thing, but I used it in my speech that morning where somebody else goes, oh my gosh, Roger, this is exactly what we're looking for our main foyer. Great. That's the beautiful thing about it. It also goes to why we should never sell again, because as soon as you feel like you're trying to convince someone of the worth of what you're selling, chances are you're in front of your wrong ICP. You're in front of the wrong customer. And that should tell you, unless this person is looking at it the wrong way and the value assignment is off, this person either doesn't want it or they want it for a fraction of the cost. And that's not how our business is engineered to make money. Dropping your prices is usually the worst strategy.
Absolutely. I agree with you. I totally agree with you. Before we wrap this up, would you like to walk through the never sell again system, your 10-point system? Would you like to do that?
We'll walk through the major points. The first thing is, again, start with the end in mind. And the end user, is the heart of it all. So who is your ICP? Who is your ideal customer profile? The book actually goes through tools on how to construct your ICP. But starting with who you are trying to sell to is essential. By the way, philosophically, the best place is start with an audience or a subset of the population that you actually care about. I coach entrepreneurs and leaders. That's who I am. That's who I understand. I've got decades of experience in their shoes. I've experienced their pain, their problems. I've tried to achieve similar goals. So it makes sense. Most of us become our own avatar. We sell to populations whose life circumstances we've been through. Once we understand our ICP, then we go turn the table on ourselves. What's your value proposition? And there's several ways, but there's a few ways suggested to create your value proposition in the book. Then it comes down to actually getting out there. By the way, I want to make sure that people don't think of never sell again as a passive system. It's not. It's active, and you got to put in the work. If you never put your pants on and leave the house, you're not going to make any sales. So going to networking events, going to meet more of your ICP is essential, either online or in person or both, because let's face it, Nike, Google, whoever, they're not calling us. We have to, every now and then, go knock or kick down a door. When we do that, it goes to needs discovery. We talked about this. Ask great questions, listen with your whole body, and then position your value proposition as the answer to their pain, their goals, their needs, their problems, or recommend somebody else. So that's really the crux of it. And there's certainly more in there. We talk about how the never sell again system can work even outside of sales. Maybe you're looking for a job. Maybe you're looking for investment. Maybe you're an investor looking for a startup to. There's a lot of scenarios where you can look at this win-win sort of scenario. But the heart of never sell again is we don't make sales into this transactional, high pressure, I need your money situation. We look at it as an opportunity to serve. And those that serve the best do the best financially, purpose-wise, and satisfaction-wise.
Stan, this was a wonderful conversation. I think it is so timely. I mean, as I said, I think we are seeing a huge problem in B2B sales. It sort of percolates into B2C, but that's not what we are touching right now. But in B2B sales, it's a huge problem of human beings. It's getting fairly complicated with AI agents coming in.
Yes.
And this is going to actually worsen it because you will do a lot more of automated stuff that you couldn't have done manually. So scaling is becoming, you know, one more server or whatever, right? So we are actually going to see a lot of, I don't want to make it too dramatic by saying a lot of bloodbath, but something very similar. You will see a lot of churn.
You will. And you know what? It's a great point you bring up about AI. And what I think we're going to see is an increasing desire for authentic relationships.
Yes.
So people that have mastered the never sell again philosophy will actually do even better in sales if they can lean into more of the relationship and human elements and doing your front end homework. Don't show up and feel like a cold call to anybody else. You want to do your front end homework. Part of that is tactical. Part of that is experience. If I know that you're a leader, I know you might experience problems like disengagement at work. You might experience people being burnt out. You might experience the challenges of budget, do more with less, and so on and so on. If I understand the challenges you're facing, I can ask really well-informed questions that I probably already know the answer to, that you go, yes, okay, clearly you understand me. I know based on your questions, you understand me. That's the beginning.
Yeah.
Really hard for AI. AI can assist us in our research, and I recommend using it, but AI doesn't replace a human when it comes to especially important B2B relationship-based sales.
Yeah, I mean, we also have to understand, at least at this point, AI is not doing stuff on its own, which it is supposed to do in 10 years down the line, where it will decide what it's going to do. So as long as we are giving it direction, the past is not showing a great, great hope. What I mean by that is, when we were not getting enough results cold calling, we brought in a dialer,
right,
which can now make hundreds of more calls than I can do as a person. So what we did, we tried to solve the problem by scaling the process, which is inefficient. So we said, okay, as a one person, we are making 100 calls, getting two connections or whatever. I'll bring in a machine which can do 1,000 calls, and then you'll have 20 people to talk to. It sounds logical, but what we are really trying to do is still get stuck at 98% failure rate. And we are okay with that.
Or worse, because you offend more people at volume. You want to hear from a telemarketer less and less and less. Same thing with LinkedIn. Now there's bots reaching it out to people on LinkedIn instead of us doing it manually. Now we're even more resistant to pitches over LinkedIn for that very reason.
That's a whole different discussion. I mean, I'm happy to do that. I'm so frustrated with LinkedIn. It's not funny.
Bits About Books is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers through its presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos, and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 99021-631-32.
Stan, this was wonderful. Thank you so much. And I really appreciate you taking the time. I know we did a lot of back and forth for this call, but I think it was well worth it. Awesome. And I'm delighted that you made time and came and spoke to us today.
Thank you for the opportunity, my friend. I hope your audience got a lot of value today, and I hope they see a lot more success by applying the Never Sell Again system.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes with great conversations on breakthrough books. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today on Bits About Books, where we talk to authors about breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and buy the book to learn firsthand and implement some of the great ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of Bits About Books. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it. This BizCast original podcast is produced for PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where the mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Subhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.